Welcome to the Weekly Leader Podcast, episode number 66. I'm Peter Mello from Sea Fever Consulting and the founder and editor of the Weekly Leader blog and podcast. And my podcasting partner, as usual, is Pam Fox-Rolland from IdeaShape. Hi, Pam. How are you today?
Excellent, Peter. How are you doing?
Doing really, really well. Thank you. Pam, we have a sponsor we've talked about a number of times, and we're going to talk about it again today. GoToMeeting, GoToMeeting.com. You're familiar with it, right?
You bet.
If you have business that is distributed anywhere across the country, across the world, you probably need a tool. You probably use the phone, but you probably could use some other tools, and GoToMeeting is one of those tools that you, if you're not using it, you should be thinking about it. It's an excellent way to keep people connected from different locations, share information, have live meetings, kind of avoid the hassles of travel, the expenses of travel, or even if you do have to travel, maybe make your travel more productive and effective by just using something like this to prepare for your meeting and your trip. So Weekly Leader listeners have the option to try a 45-day free trial. And if you go to the website, we have a link to it, but you can also go to gotomeeting.com/podcast and highly encourage you to check it out. $49 a month is what it typically costs, but this you can get the trial with all the bells and whistles for 45 days, and you don't even need to use a credit card. So just give it a try.
And our guest later today, Lindsay Levin from Leaders Quest, who you'll hear speak later in this podcast, she can be on several continents in the course of a month and has a team all around the world. And I can't imagine running her organization. I don't know what she uses, but I would imagine that something like GoToMeeting would be incredibly useful.
Absolutely. Pam, leadership in the news. The president just had a press conference a few minutes ago, and I just saw a couple things fly by on the Twitters here. And one of the things was that he acknowledges falling short on campaign promise to close Guantanamo. And it just brought to mind that a couple things. First of all, the fact that it's a good leadership characteristic, I think, to admit your mistakes or the issues, and certainly he's done that here. So, again, I didn't really hear the press conference. I just saw that headline float by, and I thought that was interesting and worthwhile to note here. The second thing that just came to mind, too, is that when you assume a new leadership position, I'm sure this will be covered in that blockbuster you're writing over there. when you assume a new leadership position, you should be probably pretty cautious about having ambitious goals that you state. You might even think them, and but you might want to just be kind of less ambitious in these goals, especially very high-profile ones that you're going to do something within a certain period of time.
I was just working with a coaching client on that, Peter, somebody who's just stepped up to a VP role and is going over her goals, and we were talking about how ambitious they were and what is that right positioning and setting expectations so that people are energized and excited about what can be accomplished, but you don't wind up the situation that Obama is in on Guantanamo.
Yeah, and I guess we don't want to tell people not to have ambitious goals. You probably, you know, it's a good thing to have ambitious goals. It's just how you deal with those goals and how you, you know, present them to your stakeholders or the outside world that you might want to just consider carefully. So you don't have to be the president. With respect to this, like you said, your client has the same challenges, and so anybody does. Jim Kouzes was just on, or currently is on Twitter doing a live chat, so it's kind of cool to see. If you don't follow Jim, you should. He's relatively new up there on Twitter. He was our guest a couple podcast episodes back, and those have been very, very popular episodes, by the way. And he's been answering questions on Twitter, which is pretty cool. And somebody, I think, asked him about books, and he said one of his there's a lot of great leadership books just out, and his favorite is Bob Sutton's Good Boss, Bad Boss. So that was kind of cool because it was our guest last week. tomorrow, we're recording this on September 10th. Tomorrow is September 11th, and I think it's always a good time to kind of remember the extraordinary courage and leadership that was demonstrated not only by the first responders to the terrorist attacks, but also to average Americans everywhere who rose up to the occasion and did courageous and remarkable things. Mike Myatt just actually had a blog post where he encouraged people to comment over there, and I put a post up that I kind of redo every year on my maritime blog, and it's some video from that day that is very – it might be even disturbing to some people, but I think it's worthwhile watching and just remembering the tragic events that unfolded that day. And then below it, I have another video of the maritime first responders. As you know, my background is from the sea, and there was an incredible response from the maritime community in New York City in particular, because as you can imagine, the chaos and the challenges of evacuating people from New York City under those circumstances that day were amazing, and the maritime community responded to it in an incredible way. Wally Bock each week gives us a taste of the best of leadership from the Independent Business Blog, so let's give that a listen.
What is your password? Your password has been accepted.
Plugged into a stream of real-time data. Cyborg soldier. A techno warrior. Computer, camera, optical display, all connected to the World Wide Web.
Crystal fibernetic technology, crystal fibernetic.
Pioneering the computerized lifestyle. The World Wide Web. The World Wide Web.
Hi, this is Wally Bock. I'm here to point you to this week's top leadership posts from the Independent Business Blogs. I love Gilbert and Sullivan, and I love Gwyn Tietro's blog, You're Not the Boss of Me. So naturally, when Gwyn posted about leadership lessons from Gilbert and Sullivan, I just had to choose it to lead off this week's selections. Dan Rockwell is called the leadership freak, but there's more leadership than freak about him, and that's for sure. This week, he gave us a post that cuts to the heart of what delegation is all about. He called it Multiplying Results. Another Dan, McCarthy by name, is back with a post about reorganization. He titled it, Don't Just Shake Up the Birdcage. It's about doing reorganization right. I enjoyed it. And I'm a cynic who believes that executives very often reorganize as a way to look busy while avoiding responsibility. Leader Labs' David Berkus made the list this week with a post titled, What Can Hedgehogs Teach Us About Strategy? He makes a great distinction between strategic thinking and strategic planning. I chronicled the rise of the net and the web as business tools in books like my award-winning Cyberpower for Business. From that perspective, the rise of social media looks very much like the rise of the web did. For one thing, self-proclaimed experts abound, even though most of them don't seem good at anything except sending out spam. The reality is that people, including business people, will begin using social media when they perceive a benefit for them. If you've been waiting for a business reason to dip your toe in the social media ocean, check out Terry Starbucker. His post lists 9 ways social media can make you a better leader. Your reason could be right there. That's it for my blog picks. Now let's tackle the question of the week. My writing partner, Tom Hall, asked this of every new client that came to his advertising agency. What do you want to be known for? Thanks for listening. You can find more of my pointers and commentary on the 3-Star Leadership blog. It's at http://blog.3starleadership.com. My latest book, Ruthless Focus, is out. You can buy it at Amazon or read about it on my blog. I'm also on Twitter, and I'll see you here next week.
Initiating shutdown sequence.
Thanks, Wally. Our website of the week, Social Media Minute. Just really quick one. Last week we mentioned with the Weekly Leader iPhone app, and this week we're going to give away a copy of it free. So if you follow us on Twitter, and that's at Weekly Leader on Twitter, we're going to have a contest on there. Look for the hashtag also, Weekly Leader app, and we'll have a blog post on that up by the time you hear this. So we hope that if you have an iPhone, if you haven't purchased it already, there's no harm in entering this contest, and hopefully we'll have a lucky winner next week. Your research report of the week, Pam, what do you got?
Well, I've got two things. One that it seems like a ponderous academic article, but I got to tell you, it's well worth a read. And the other that is a fabulous slide share from a fellow we know through Twitter. So the topic is diversity, and I chose it because of the interview that you'll hear in this podcast with Lindsay Levin of Leaders Quest. And it's a topic that I'm tremendously passionate about. And maybe we'll wind up doing a whole podcast on it at some point. But I think so many people miss the boat on diversity, not because they're thinking about it incorrectly, but because they don't think very often about it. And the thinking tends to stop at hiring. It's like they look around the room at their team and they go, great, we've got diversity. And often they mean shades of people's skins and gender, and sometimes they remember about backgrounds of different kind of life paths, educational paths. Sometimes they remember about different sort of personalities and inclinations and skills and interests and all that. But seldom do they think, this is just the starting point, right? We've got some people who think differently in the room. How do we make that an asset to the team? And what the research shows again and again is that diversity is either something that brings a team down or something that brings a team up. Yeah, it's fascinating. But the more homogenous the team, the more they tend to have kind of average performance on, modestly creative, certainly intellectual tasks, other than routine tasks, right, where diversity may not matter. But anything that's non-routine, which is frankly most of the work that our listeners do, diversity is either a drag on performance or a tremendous enhancement to performance. And what this academic article says is that the mediator there between diversity and group effectiveness is something that they call interpersonal congruence, which is a fancy psychology name for, am I seen in this group as I see myself? In other words, am I known to people here? If I see myself as somebody who is innovative, who is warm, who has tremendous depth in engineering, do other people see me that way? Diversity is only useful in increasing the performance of groups if people can actually bring the diversity of their backgrounds and perspectives and life experiences to the group, right?
Right.
And if they don't feel that they can be known, then it's really, it's not, that diversity isn't useful. And actually it winds up being a drag on performance because people feel that they're not known in this group and they're reluctant to do what you and I, Peter, often talk about, is engage in healthy conflict, challenge each other, bring up the hard issues. That's much easier to do if you know that other people know who you are and are fine that you're different from them. So that's where I'm going to leave it for the article. It's an excellent article. If you're comfortable with academic articles, I highly recommend it. The other one that I'm going to put up, Peter, thank you for putting up on the podcast notes, is from Joe Gerstand, and on Twitter, we'll have his Twitter ID in there. It's just Joegerstandt. And he's been generous enough to put a bunch of his presentations in SlideShare. He's a consultant who works in diversity, human performance, organizational development. And I know him only through Twitter and have just been delighted to do so because his work is really tremendous. So he's shared a number of things on SlideShare. I'm referring to his, what he calls 10 things presentation. And I'll highlight just a little bit of what he says in here in his 10 points about diversity. It's diversity exists only in relationship. Diversity is between people, right? And so he says that the diversity versus talent debate that bubbles up from time to time is fundamentally misinformed. Talent is an individual attribute, and diversity is a relational attribute. And so all these squishy things that are kind of hard to talk about in groups, which is why you get a consultant in the room like Joe or me or somebody else who, you know, does this work to help people have that conversation about their relationships. And he makes the excellent point that whether diversity leads to positive or negative outcomes depends on the capacity of that group to deal with difference. Anyway, I highly recommend this easy read to you from Joe and the somewhat more challenging one on diversity. And feel free to anybody who's listening who has thoughts on how diversity works with their group, leave us a message on the Weekly Leader site. We'd be glad to include some short audio in our podcast or make a comment on the podcast notes, get in touch with one of us on Twitter. As you can tell, it's just a real passion for me because I think it's increasingly important to what makes organizations tick in this flatter, more connected world.
Great. We should be able to probably embed that SlideShare into the show notes, I would think. SlideShare, unless he's taken away that functionality, which I'm sure he hasn't. Our weekly leader this week was Lindsay Levin, and you did a great job speaking with her. So tell us a little bit about it.
So Lindsay is the founder and leader of an organization called Leaders Quest. There are similar organizations on the web, so go find the link that we have on our podcast notes. It's spelled Leaders with an apostrophe and Quest, and the website is LeadersQuest, obviously no apostrophe, .org. What it does is takes people basically on field trips, but the most fantabulous field trips you can imagine. So they have these things called open quests, which is how most people start to experience it. They also do private quests for groups of executives from a particular company. In fact, they took the whole Bain partnership to China because a Bain partner who I've known for a long time participated in an open quest, and it was so amazing. Anyway, so they take a group of 10, 15 executives from various parts in the world, and they go visit intensely some place in the world that is experiencing a lot of change and that is quite interesting. And they meet with people at all levels in all sectors. And they've cultivated amazing relationships with people who are local tribal leaders, with people who are amazing civic leaders, with people who really have stories to tell and can also engage the leaders in the quest with, in provocative and useful ways. And so it's tremendously valuable for executives who are getting to know a particular region. Their company might be expanding into Brazil or what have you. But the purpose primarily is for the leaders themselves to make the most of that experience to develop their own articulation of their values, their own vision for their company and for themselves. And then as she talks about, to build a leadership community around the world that is inclusive of the participants in the quests and the local folks, that that basically helps everybody connect to do worthy projects around the world.
Lindsay Levin, welcome to Weekly Leader.
Hello, Pam. I'm very pleased to be joining you.
I am delighted that we were introduced a couple months ago by a mutual colleague who has participated in Leaders Quest actually several times, and he's an exec at Bain, which is where both of us made a start a very long time ago.
That's right. My first job was at Bain & Company. Shaped hugely, actually, the direction, I guess, that my life took subsequently, although I was only there for a couple of years. But still very much part of my life, not least of all because I married somebody from Bain and very much stayed in touch with the people there.
Absolutely. Well, let's start with who you are and what you do, and then we'll talk to how you got there, because it's a very interesting path. But please tell us about Leader's Quest and your role in it.
Sure. Yeah, well, Leader's Quest, I started in 2001. It was very much my response to, I guess, a question lots of us ask ourselves at different times in life. Why am I really here, and what do I really want to do? So I think of it as my answer to what I wanted to do when I grew up. It came to me only in my sort of second half of my 30s, but it's something that is now, you know, right at the center of who I am, I guess, and in a way it's an expression of who I am. We're a social enterprise, which is a non-profit company and also a registered charity. And the core product, if you like, of Leader's Quest is programs that we call quests, which are really experiential journeys for leaders from all around the world and from all sectors. And we design programs, usually a week, sometimes of different lengths, for groups of leaders, often a mixed group from all sorts of countries, all sorts of companies, plus NGOs, plus government, and sometimes for groups of senior leaders from single organizations. So we do quite a lot for boards and leadership teams of companies. Design 4, 5, 6 days of very intense immersion in parts of the world that are really changing fast and or represent some of humanity's biggest challenges and opportunities. So we currently lead quests in China, India, Brazil, several African countries, South Africa, Nigeria, Mozambique, Russia, Turkey. We're just about also to start working in Kenya. And the idea is to really put people or give people the opportunity to immerse themselves in other worlds and to really engage with human beings on the ground in a given country. At one level, people learn a huge amount about India, for example, by coming on a quest to India. But for us, that's just almost the first stage. It's much more about thinking about the world and how it's changing, so thinking about macro issues, also thinking about and engaging with micro issues in the sense of meeting with interesting businesses, people who are real pioneers, people who are innovating, scientists, artists, technologists, etc. And also really engaging at a very human level with grassroots issues, with poverty, with access to water, access to education, access to healthcare, homelessness. So during the course of a quest, people spend time with, literally, quite literally, might be ranging from the president of a country to the homeless in a country. And we think of the experience as operating at a macro, micro, and inner world level. So the macro is obviously thinking about the world in a big sense. The micro is more personal, communities, networks, organizations, companies. And the inner is often, well, always, I would say, where the learning comes back to, which is really around who we are as people, how we choose to live our lives, how we choose to lead, the kinds of choices we make in as business leaders or as leaders in government or as leaders in civil society. And people always, by the end of a quest, are deeply thinking about some of the most fundamental questions around really what it is to be a global citizen, to be a human being. You know, what makes life meaningful? What do we really stand for? Typically, most people don't arrive on a quest saying this is why they're coming. Usually the starting point is wanting to learn about a country, wanting to think about how you build your business, wanting to take your leadership forward in various different ways. But always by the end of a journey, people are thinking in very multi-layered ways, I would say, and a lot of personal reflection goes on.
I was so impressed with the scope of the program and the purpose of the program, and that it combines that inner journey with a very intense immersion with rapidly changing societies and situations that many of these leaders have never been in before. I'm wondering, you keep in touch, I know, with many of your alums, of participants in the journey. How do they tell you that their leadership has changed as a result of participating in a quest?
I think, I mean, again, I think of it as operating at several different levels. Some of it is very personal, you know, behavior, how I choose to be, literally with my family, as well as with my friends, as well as with my business colleagues, as well as out in the wider world. And other bits are to do with organizational changes, you know, company decisions, corporate decisions, choices, investments, and so forth. And then the third area would be in terms of partnerships and thinking, if you like, laterally bridging between sectors. One of the things that we're very passionate about is the notion that to really address some of the challenges that we have in common, we need to reach across sectors and not assume that, you know, the answers all lie in one particular direction. So we see lots of outcomes in all those areas. I mean, if I start with the last, partnerships between business and charities. We have quite a number of companies and individuals who started charitable foundations as a result of coming on a quest, who've thought deeply about how do they give back, in the case of a company, for example, way beyond CSR. So it's not, I'm not here just talking about corporate social responsibility. I'm also talking about the essence of, you know, what your company is really all about, what, you know, why are you here, how do you contribute to society whilst also earning a return for shareholders and stakeholders and so forth. And we're pretty provocative in asking those kinds of questions to people. So I think there are outcomes and impact and choices and decisions and actions that people take as results of quests that fit into all of those different buckets. I'd say in terms of the how does one's leadership change, probably the biggest thing is around open-mindedness and self-reflection and looking back at oneself differently. So there's something very powerful about spending time in environments that are unfamiliar. This goes equally for leaders from, say, a charity as a leader of a business. So often, you know, leaders from the charitable world, perhaps who are used to working in developing countries, will learn more from the business meetings that they come on a quest, you know, being in a boardroom, being in a factory and so forth, and having some of their presuppositions challenged about how the business world works. You know, they'll learn as much from that as perhaps a business person will from going and doing something in the community. So the mix, the juxtaposition, the contrasts, the many different points of view is, I think, provocative for people, inspiring for people, and really gives one pause for thought. And there's something, I'm not sure if humbling is the right word, in some ways it may be, something quite humbling about, if you like, putting oneself in proportion and just recognizing that whatever points of view we hold, you know, are not, are only a view from a point, if you like. There's no monopoly on wisdom, and finding that you might arrive, say, in China with quite a lot of assumptions about how the Chinese work and what the value system is here and what the political system is here and how you feel about that. And typically the kinds of experiences, the kinds of discussions, conversations, very personal, very under the surface kinds of conversations that we're able to have through quests challenge that. And people, all of my team, included myself, you know, often find yourself smiling as you catch yourself again, you know, rushing to judgment and then realizing that actually you just learned another lesson.
Putting experiential leadership work in the context of the unfamiliar, I'm just struck by the value of it. I do quite a bit of experiential leadership work as well as executive coaching, and yet most of it is in boardrooms that either are the same as they're often in or look just the same.
Yes.
They have routines for dealing with it, and the people who are in those experiences with them are people whose frames of references they're familiar with, even if they're new to them. And to combine that with a context that is so fresh and so challenging, I would imagine kind of strips away or makes irrelevant some of the routines that people have come up with, or at least enables them to notice what's coming out of their mouth and go, wow, that's sort of automatic and maybe not a fit for the situation. I wonder how often I do that.
Yes, I think, there's a sort of self-consciousness, self-awareness thing, isn't there, that can take place in these circumstances. You know, even down to the smallest of things. I mean, if I think of India, for example, where we do a lot of quest work, and, you know, on the one hand, we meet with some of the biggest companies, some of the most inspiring entrepreneurs, some of the leading technology firms and so forth. And we also spend a lot of time in communities, in slum communities, in people's homes, which might be, you know, the size of a tiny, tiny shower room and sleep 10, 12 people. And we'll be sitting in with the family and really talking and engaging with them. And, you know, the smallest of things, taking your shoes off as you arrive, finding the need to make yourself rather small to even fit into the space. And then becoming extremely conscious of the environment and the space and the air around you and so forth. All of that, there's a kind of shake you up kind of thing that goes on, I suppose, in that process. But also an opening up, and suddenly there's much more space actually to let different ideas in and so forth. I'd also say one of the things that I'm most excited about in our work, and I would say it's something which has unfolded over time and become more and more evident to all of us, you know, working in the organisation, is that what we really are at heart is a global community. You know, I can talk about doing quests, I can talk about the work of our foundation. All of that fits into being part of a global community and using and leveraging the power of the network that we have created and continue to create, you know, every day in Leaders Quest. And that community comprises the people who come on quests, the participants, the people who host us, you know, all these various people that we visit from all sorts of walks of life in the countries that we go to, the fellows in our foundation programs, and I'll say a little bit more about that in a moment, people mentoring the fellows and so forth. So there's a tremendous cross-section of people in this community. It's really rather unique in that it's very global, and it comprises people doing leadership, working as leaders, participating in life as leaders from very, very different circumstances. So, you know, within the Leaders Quest community, we've got chief executives and we've got women rag pickers who live, you know, literally on municipal rubbish dumps and make their living a dollar a day or so picking through rubbish and organise, in some cases, hundreds of other women and families who are also rag pickers. And, you know, individuals like that who are stepping up to be leaders in their community, you know, people in China working in their own rural communities to address livelihood issues where people are really living on the poverty line and so forth. Now, those people are very much part of this community that we've created. And the way we design the experiences that we deliver is to really think deeply about how those can be mutual. So how can I meet, you know, that lady, I'm thinking of one, for example, lady called Anwari, living on the Mumbai municipal dump. Phenomenal woman, you know, married at 12, had 8 kids, had a very violent husband, lives in a tiny shack, and it would be an understatement to say she's a community organiser, but you know, that might be one way of thinking of it. So she's leading hundreds of families and hundreds of women around empowerment, around getting themselves organised to have some leverage to improve local amenities and so on and so forth, access to water, working in more of a collective as they do all of this work with the rubbish and so on. You know, when I go to meet her, or I go with a business leader to meet her, it's very important to me, to Leaders Quest, to our ethos, that is a meeting which isn't based on the premise that I've got a lot or we've got a lot and this lady doesn't have a lot. It's not, you know, we come to visit to sort of suck up knowledge and then go away and tell the story. It's much, much more reciprocal than that. So one of the things we think a lot about is scarcity and abundance. You know, I'm very short of time. and I have, relatively speaking, in global terms, a lot of money. You know, I spend time with a lot of people who, because they're unemployed or underemployed, may not have a lot of time, or may rather have a lot of time but have no money. They may have a lot of wisdom because of their life experiences that I don't have, that they can share with me, and so forth. So in all these different instances, there are things that we can learn from people whose lives are very, very different to our own. And designing experiences, it's a light touch design, but of course we put thought into it. So enabling meetings to happen where, despite a huge economic difference, despite not speaking the same language, despite different cultures and so forth, we actually meet as human beings and engage in a very mutual way where both parties or all parties go away feeling, you know, in some way that experience has changed me and I've learnt something that I can take away, and there is an opportunity as a result of that for me to contribute back into the world. So that's very much the thinking behind what we do, and it's a rather wonderful sort of multi-layer, it's like unpeeling an onion or a flower opening up. You just keep discovering more and more layers. And I found myself thinking a lot about abundance as opposed to scarcity. In some ways, my original motivation for starting Leader's Quest, there were several factors, but one was a sadness, really, at the things that are disconnected in the world, the things that are broken and aren't working, you know, ranging from sort of depleting natural resources to poverty, you know, in the face of huge growth in global population, and, you know, these huge macro challenges that we face was a big driver for me in starting Leader's Quest. So a sadness at some level about the things that weren't working and the things that were broken, and our relationships being broken, our ability to really communicate and listen and hear and engage with and recognise how much we have in common, and that ultimately we sink or swim together. So that was part of my original motivation in starting Leader's Quest. What I found is that all those things at some level still stand. But the thing that isn't, that there's not a scarcity of, is human potential. There's a scarcity of opportunity. There are huge numbers of people in the world who don't have access to decent education, who don't have access to an opportunity to make the most of who they are and what they can bring. But they have phenomenal potential. And I relearn that, you know, every other day. And you know, one of the ways of seeing that is that's fantastic news for the world. You know, we've got a lot of people out there full of ideas, full of ability, desperate to make a contribution, desperate to be able to, you know, bring up their families, support themselves, leave the world somewhat better than they find it. And I'm continually refueled, if you like, with hope and inspiration through that kind of engagement with people.
You know, that thinking is so evident in the Leadership Fellows program that you created. Why don't you tell us about that?
Yes, I would love to. About sort of 3 years into the Leader's Quest journey, we were, of course, already engaging a lot with these sort of community projects that I'm referring to. And one of the things we were very conscious of was that we had designed quests that relatively speaking, wealthy leaders, you know, people with access to resources could come and participate on, people who already had influence and already had power. But we weren't at that time offering a quest-like experience for people who didn't have all of those things, who couldn't travel, and you know, for whom the whole economics looked very different. And as we talked to our friends at the grassroots level in communities, they started to say to us, you know, when you come, there's something very special that happens, but we want more of an ongoing relationship, and we would like to be working with you in an ongoing way, and to be really sharing and participating and growing this, you know, initial idea of Leader's Quest. The upshot of all of that was that we founded the Leader's Quest Foundation. It's a registered charity in the UK and in the USA. And we designed with local partners, very much with local people, a leadership development program that we call the Fellowship Program. And the way to think about that is that's really another form of quest, although it looks very different. It's a 12-month leadership development program. It's aimed at, by and large, the poorest of the poor. So most of our fellows are people from very, very disadvantaged backgrounds in developing countries. Some have had very, very poor education, so even literacy is a challenge for some of them. Others are well-educated, but pretty much all of them are coming from very poor circumstances. All of them are people who have shown real leadership potential. There's a whole selection process that goes on locally to select people for the program. and they come together for modules of learning. Some of that also takes place as an interface with the Quest programs that we bring into the countries, but lots of on-the-ground modules happen for them around building their leadership skills, building their leadership capacity. They also have a mentor, a local mentor, who they're in very regular contact with, and they all do projects out in the community, very real projects around improving and addressing community issues. So, for example, we've got one young woman also in Mumbai, 21 years old, leading a program to work with the police on domestic violence. Domestic violence is unfortunately a very big problem in Indian cities. And she's run training across six police stations with hundreds and hundreds of police. She's, you know, done work that's impacted over 100,000 people in the communities that she's touched. You know, she's still only 21 years old. And she's been able to do that as her project as part of the Leaders Quest Fellowship program.
Yeah, so, let me just pause there for a sec, because I think people will be nodding until they hear she's 21, and I work a lot with youth when I can, and with college age students of various sorts, and some from disadvantaged communities here in the U.S. And some people see immediately, I've got the potential to lead, and a program like this just is a huge boost up. And sometimes in our communities here, there are programs that can give them that sort of boost. And for others, it is news that they can lead. It is news that people want their wisdom and their youthful energy and their capabilities and their skills and their hopes and everything they can make of themselves. I wonder if you find that in other countries as you're scouting about for fellows, whether there's a bridge to cross first in people saying, wait a minute, all this work that I'm doing, even if no one has ever told me that I'm important and can make a big difference in my world, that there's some reality to that. I wonder if you've seen that, or whether people say, you know what, I'm ready to lead, bring on a program.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think what I'd probably say is that we find people who are just getting on in different ways with leading and showing initiative and so forth. You know, they're usually already doing things. That's part of the reason that we identify them. But they're doing that in an informal capacity. And as you rightly say, possibly the biggest gift that they get from the program is it changes how they see themselves and how they see their potential. So there's a big piece around confidence, you know, in circumstances where they haven't had attention paid to them before. You know, they haven't had teachers that have paid attention to them, and in many cases they haven't had parents that have paid attention to them and necessarily celebrated all that they can be. So there's a significant shift that goes on in terms of people's understanding of who they are, and of what their potential is and what their possibility is. So a big scaling up of dreams of what can be. It also feels a lot like, you know, watering a desert and then all the flowers spring up. When people really are lacking opportunity, if you give them opportunity, they grab it, generally speaking, with both hands, and they absolutely go for it. So it's quite astonishing how much people grow, how much people achieve. We have an incredibly low dropout rate. We have an incredibly low, you know, non-attendance rate. It almost never happens unless there's illness or some sort of, you know, serious family circumstance that arises. People really, really want to grab this opportunity and to make the most of it. So it's a change in how one sees oneself. And a lot of this comes back to identity, which I think is a fundamental issue for leaders and something that most of us don't really spend very much time thinking about, because we're also busy getting on with the job, so to speak. Yes, a couple of weeks back I spent time in Ramallah in the Middle East with a gentleman called Abdullah, who's a 35-year-old leader of a youth movement that I do a lot of work with there. And he's a great example of somebody who really understands who he is in the world, who's really got a firm grasp on his own identity and what he stands for, even in circumstances where it's actually very challenging to stand up and be present in that way. He's someone whose work is all about persuading his own population, the Palestinian population, about the kind of compromises that are needed for peace and to have a two-state solution, and engaging in that kind of dialogue with Israelis, including Israelis who are not at all supportive of a two-state solution. And he's got an incredible tolerance, sort of latitude, I'd say, in a smile, really, and not rushing to judgment in the way that he engages with people, something that he's found his way to, having had a difficult start in life, quite a sort of violent start in life, but he's made some choices and is very content, positive, confident about the fact that if he's just the best that he can be, and if he interacts with each individual that he spends time with in his life in that way, he will have a positive impact, and at some level that's enough. I think that's a very powerful model for others, and certainly I took away a lot of learning from that encounter with him.
I'm just reflecting on all the folks that you have had opportunity to learn from, Lindsay, and you've had such a varied career, first half of your career, who knows where things go, but from starting at BAME and doing big firm consulting to a family business that you were quite involved with and maybe still are, and then founding this nonprofit and then the foundation. One of the things that I just am in awe at is you literally know thousands and thousands of people all around the world, from the slums in Mumbai to the most senior executives and I'm sure to the, you know, moms where your kids go to school and all of that. Mm. How do you hold that? And you know, you're welcome to go to the technical sense of you know, But how do you hold that, those multiplicity of relationships, when there's only 24 hours in a day and only one you?
Mm. Well, it's a great question, and it is a real challenge. There's no getting away from it. I think just intuitively, I am a connector. I think of the work I do as being a bridge. I naturally, way before I started Leaders Quest, I've always connected people if I think that it would be useful and beneficial for them to be connected. That's just a reflex reaction for me. And I'm also very relational rather than transactional. I see the world and experience the world in terms of relationships and in terms of how we are related to one another, and I'm interested in people. I like people. I like spending time with people. So at some level, I guess it's just, you know, that it's the way I'm wired, it's the way I think, it's the way I experience the world. It comes very naturally to me. It does feel, you know, I do feel as if my brain's exploding at times. It's just so many, you know, it's like a vast sort of Rolodex in there at last, you know, because of course it's actually quality relationships as opposed to what somebody's name is and what their contacts are. It's knowing them and knowing who they are and why they do what they do. So the mass of it is quite challenging. As an organization, we've had to think about how we hold all these relationships across the team. So everything from, you know, databases to relationship management to the ways in which we're in touch with people and so forth, we've had to put increasing amounts of thought into. But actually, it is all about the personal. You know, the real point is the personal kind of high-touch experience. So I'd say I that is how I spend my time, is being in touch with, meeting, connecting with people. It takes a huge amount of energy. It gives me energy too. Certain circumstances give me a lot of energy. But then I don't have enough of it, but peace, silence is just the most wonderful thing for me. It's quite rare, but if I do get the chance to be on my own, you know, being in the mountains, I love music, but I don't need music for that. I mean, just the sound of silence and a big open space is absolutely wonderful, wonderful. And if my batteries go very low, that's typically what I need to do.
So important. And as we have had the privilege of talking with people like you and leaders throughout sectors, find many of them quite thoughtful about what they need to do to recharge their batteries, because people would be very glad to drain that battery to every last, you know, to every last bit.
Yeah, I think, you know, where you put your boundaries is quite a difficult question, and I'm not very good at it, so I wouldn't be a model that I particularly recommend following in that respect. I think having permeable boundaries, sort of as a principle in life, in the way you engage with people, is something very valuable. Now, that doesn't mean to say that you then run yourself into the ground and become, you know, so that you can't function. That obviously would be completely counterproductive. But there is something about being willing to be accessible, willing to be engaged, willing to go the extra mile, that is very, very powerful. I think that's also a facet of leadership. You do pay a bit of a price for that. I think it would perhaps be untrue to say otherwise. Certainly that's my experience. But it feels like it's a price worth paying.
So you both help people learn about leadership from all sectors of society in more countries than most people will ever read about, let alone visit in their lives. And you also lead a growing organization. What have you learned? What are a couple of nuggets you've learned from the leadership work that you do in Leaders Quest that you've brought back to how you lead your organization?
Well, I think something which is very relevant to Leaders Quest, but also relevant to many, if not all, other organizations, is the combination between being visionary and being pragmatic, being visionary and knowing how to implement and get stuff done. And, you know, one can often find entrepreneurs, particularly actually social entrepreneurs, with great vision and struggling on delivery, poor on delivery, poor on finish. And equally, you can have people who are excellent at doing the detail but lacking in the vision. I think having that as a combination is a little rarer than we perhaps need in the world. You know, we could do with more people with that capacity. And in Leaders Quest, those two things are very, very important. It's visionary in quite an audacious way, and we have to kind of smile at ourselves about that. You know, we want to change the world. We want to improve the state of the world. This is not a small thing. We recognize we're playing a small part in some of the big kind of shift changes that are perhaps underway. But it's very much about vision, and it's about being prepared to be idealistic and stand up and say so. At the same time, we have to get things done. We have to demonstrate impact and outcomes. We have to deliver quests. We have to have buses that turn up on time. You know, we have to make very complicated programs and schedules and so forth. I'm quite good at those two, so I can dive into the detail when I need to. I prefer not to, but I know how to do that. And I think I've got some vision. Recognizing the importance of those two things in how we grow Leaders Quest is very crucial. And recognizing the need for respect across that sort of a spectrum within the organization, and for real mutual appreciation across the team in terms of who brings what to the team. I guess another thing I'd mention is that, you know, what we encounter all the time through our work is that people, we're all wired differently. We have different strengths. We have different ways of looking at things. We have different lenses that we look through. I'm often immensely struck by that. And, you know, once you layer everything from gender to culture to age to background to sector, etc., that the many different ways in which we look at things, plus the sort of natural orientation that we might have in terms of our left brain and our right brain and how we naturally configure and relate to the world. There's great diversity and ability to speak to and engage with and respect that kind of diversity, I think, is a very important facet of leadership. And not simply, you know, because you are of a certain type, only be able to relate to people of that type. I think that's happened a lot in business. You know, I think in the business world we've ended up with a huge skew to what you might call the left brain skill set, a huge skew to what can be measured, and a lack of appreciation of the importance of things that can't be measured but are incredibly real. You know, anger, love, passion, etc. Fear. These things are very real in businesses. You know, fear, anger, love, these things are all present every day in companies, but they're not easy to measure, and for some people they're also difficult to talk about. And so we don't really pay proper attention to them. But they're going on, whether or not you choose to ignore them, they're going on. So recognizing, being able to embrace, you know, the emotional intelligence side, the what I would also call spiritual intelligence side, and by that I mean the search for meaning in life and how you make meaning of life, as well as the intellectual, as well as ecological, the appreciation of all those things being of value is something that I think good leaders have to varying degrees, typically quite intuitively, and they may need to work on certain facets of that. I think in Leaders Quest we're having certainly a lot of fun with thinking about and working on how we grow a very, very unusual organization, because our team is pretty much as diverse as the world that we engage with. And we have, I think, done a good job of developing internal kind of habits and the way we do things that make the best of that. It's not to say we can't always be doing more, but we're enjoying that, and we're investing significantly in that in terms of our time. So given that we're all spread around the world, when we're together as a team, the Leaders Quest team, we typically don't spend lots of time talking about the sort of function of the business. We can do that on the phone. When we're together, we really spend time on the quality of our relationships. And if we get that right, then all the other decisions become very easy to make, because we understand one another.
You know,
again, that would be something. Yeah, go ahead.
As you probably know, the research supports that. And the research that I'm thinking of is there's been a pretty good body of research over the last 10 years that what makes the difference between diversity that tears teams apart and diversity that really contributes to the success of the organization is having people feel comfortable showing up with the fullness of who they are.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, I very much agree with that. And, of course, that's part of our approach and ethos when we go into a quest. We're thinking about that with every participant. We're thinking about that with everybody we meet. But also very much, part of the ethos within the organization. And again, it's multi-layered, because you keep finding situations and examples where you've missed the point. And great, you know, you look in the mirror and realize, oh, I didn't quite get it there. And there's another dimension to this person that I hadn't appreciated that they can bring to what we do.
So let's turn to a few questions that we ask our weekly leaders. One is, if you could lunch with a historical or contemporary leader, who and what would you like to talk about? And I say this knowing that you have the opportunity to lunch with, you know, a whole variety of contemporary leaders in pretty much any corner of the world. Is there anyone you've missed?
There's many, many leaders that I've missed and not had the opportunity to have lunch with, both historic and present, and many, many more people I hope to have lunch with. I think I would pick philosophers. I think, and I'd be very, very minded as to anything from a Buddhist monk or various people actually in the field of theology. I'd be very interested to sit and talk with. In the world of philosophy, Ken Wilber wrote The Theory of Everything, amongst other books. I'd love to have lunch with him. If I could go back in time, I'd probably want to have lunch with Einstein. And I'd want to talk about human nature, what makes us tick, how that's moving, how that's developing. what makes us who we are.
Is reading someplace you look for inspiration, or is it just so difficult to find that spot in the day for it?
Yeah, I mean, I love reading. I don't typically have as much time for it as I'd like. At the moment, I'm actually writing, so I'm seeking to capture some of what I've been doing over the last few years, and I've sacrificed my reading for the writing. Eventually, I'll emerge out of that and be able to read again.
Oh, excellent!
But it also means that when I'm reading, I'm paying attention to how people write. So I've become very interested in the style and the way in which people communicate and get their message across. It's kind of brought a new lens to the reading.
That's wonderful, and when it's out, I can't wait to read it, and we will get the news out to our Weekly Leader listeners, because you have a uniquely broad perspective to bring to the topic. So what about, Lindsay, we always conclude with advice that our Weekly Leaders have for aspiring leaders. And if you were talking with a group of folks who were just starting their journey as adults and possibly leaders,
yeah,
what would you say to them?
I'd encourage them to stay open. I'd encourage them to keep an open mind in the big picture and also every day, in the little things as well as the big things. I'd encourage them to be willing to hold the big questions present, as well as the immediacy of day-to-day decisions and choices and getting on with building the business or building the organization or building their career. You know, the questions around, why am I here and how am I going to contribute? I think leadership is about contribution. And I also think that, happily, in giving you receive, and you know, the more that one engages, shares, contributes, somehow or another, the universe conspires to give things back to you. And I guess the last related thought, and I'll borrow a phrase from somebody who was very wise on this topic, Gandhi, who amongst many wonderful things that Gandhi had to say was, be the change that you want to see in the world. I think the question of being, the question of how we choose to be, how we choose to show up, how we choose to behave in our everyday dealings with people and engagement is of course what people see, what people experience, how we will be judged by others, and just the kind of holding that that question present in one's mind, in one's life, around being what you want the future to be, being the kind of person that you'd like to see more of.
I have a smile on my face because today, as we're talking, it is Rosh Hashanah, and I met earlier with family, and I gave my teenage niece a book about Gandhi, and she's a lovely, lovely, deep person, and is mired in the ups and downs of sophomore high school experiences.
Right, right.
And, you know, I just wanted to affirm for her the bigness of the world and the importance of how one holds oneself in it, so that,
yes,
you know, who sat with whom at lunch has never been her concern, and it saddens me when the world becomes so small that that's what it's about, and whether it's reading about Gandhi or the kind of learning that Leaders Quest can provide, or getting involved in an organization in the community that has heart and meaning for you. I really appreciate the advice that you're offering. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Pam. Very enjoyable talking to you. Lovely.
Well, Pam, I've been on the website, and I'm looking for where you can apply for a job. Leader's Quest, because I want to go work over there, but unfortunately I think they don't have any openings. What a great interview. What a great organization. What inspiring.
Absolutely. Maybe someday when you do one of your topical summaries we put together, Lindsay from Leader's Quest and Bruce McNamer from TechnoServe and some of the women we interviewed from Uganda for Global Women's Leadership Network. But it's very inspiring, isn't it, to see what can be done around the world.
Yeah, definitely. And you know what? It was just what an incredible program, too, to just be a participant in. So go definitely check out their website. It's leadersquest.org. We'll have a link to it in the show notes and see what they're all about. And we thank Lindsay for being our guest this week on Weekly Leader. Yesterday, Pam, I had an unbelievable conversation with Captain Alwyn Landry, who was the captain on a Tidewater supply boat that was on scene attached to the Deepwater Horizon when the explosion happened. And he ended up rescuing all of the people from the Deepwater Horizon, many of which were forced to jump over the edge into the water at...
Can you imagine?
Yeah, well, no, you wait till you hear this story. I mean, it's just incredible. We'll probably be playing that in 2 weeks, but it's an incredible story. We want to make sure that you guys all apply for that or enter into the contest for the Weekly Leader iPhone app. It is really cool. I've gotten a bunch of feedback, actually, from people who've actually... went there and purchased it, downloaded it, and are using it and think it's really fantastic. So if you don't have it yet and you want to wait before you purchase it, you want to give you a shot at winning it, look for us on Twitter and the blog for the contest we'll run. The blog is weeklyleader.net, and our email address is podcast@weeklyleader.net. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/weeklyleader. Like us there. We're on Twitter. And it's @weeklyleader is our Twitter ID. Pam, what's yours?
Pam FR.
Mine's Peter Mello. It's PETERMELLO. And all of our other Weekly Leader contributors' Twitter IDs will be in the show notes. If you use iTunes, we always appreciate it if you rate and review the podcast. And we got some great ones up there. And if you've done it, thank you so much. If not, we would appreciate it if you would. And we have our sponsor, which is GoToMeeting.com, and you can get a 45-day free trial by going to GoToMeeting.com/podcast. And then we also have our partnership with Meet the Boss TV, some great stuff up there. We're doing Meet the Boss Mondays, although it was Labor Day this week, so we kind of missed our Meet the Boss Monday, but check it out this Monday coming up. We're going to have another one. So we know how valuable your time is, and we really appreciate you investing it with us, and we look forward to speaking with you next week.